It's Thursday, May 28th, 2009, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. I'm your host, Radical Russ Belville. Produced and distributed by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C., this is your normal daily audio stash, the growing truth about cannabis. Welcome to the most popular podcast regarding marijuana in all of America and all the world, featuring interviews with scientists, politicians, doctors, prohibition policy activists, regular cannabis consumers, musicians, and Normal's staff and Normal's board of directors, along with music and comedy no other podcast can offer. You can always find out more about our show at our website, stash.normal.org. And continue the education and conversation on our blog as well. We're ending marijuana prohibition with education, one listener at a time. The podcasting and blogging technology for the Normal Daily Audio Stash is provided by Red Aphid Interactive Media. For your professional web design needs, visit redaphid.com. Hey Stashers, Radical Russ here. You are listening to a best of the Daily Audio Stash for the week of May 26, 2009. We're getting ready for the Aspen Legal Seminar on June 4th, 5th, and 6th, so we're going to have some downtime here at the Stash. We're bringing back some of your favorites from the previous Daily Audio Stashes over the past 14 months, so you're going to get a little bit of reefer madness, some stupid stoner stories, some great cannabis science from Dr. Mitch Earlywine, and some of my favorite songs from the Daily Toker Tunes, brought to you by MarijuanaMusicAwards.com. I'll have plenty of live information coming from Aspen Legal Seminar over the weekend of June 4th, 5th, and 6th, audio and video to be posted later. Thank you so much for understanding. Keep up on the blog at stash.normal.org. I'll be posting somewhat infrequently during these next couple of weeks, but if there's any new breaking news stories, you'll find them there on the Stash. We'll be back with all original shows on Monday, June 8th, 2009. So sit back and enjoy the best of your Normal Daily Audio Stash.
Hello, I'm Paul Stanford from the Hemp and Cannabis Foundation, or THCF. Medical marijuana is legal in 13 states today, and THCF has clinics in 8 of those states. Our doctors help qualified patients obtain an authorization for medical marijuana in their state. Patients are eligible for medical marijuana with a history of either severe chronic pain and or nausea, cancer, AIDS or HIV, hepatitis, glaucoma, seizure disorders like epilepsy, chronic muscle spasms such as multiple sclerosis or asthma, neurodegenerative diseases such as Alzheimer's, and gastrointestinal disorders like IBS or Crohn's disease. If you or someone you know has one of these conditions, our doctors will help you obtain a permit for medical marijuana. THCF Medical Clinics has offices in Washington State, Oregon, California, Colorado, Hawaii, Nevada, Montana, and now Michigan. Call 1-800-723-0188 or go to the web at hemp.org or 1-800-723-0188.
Is an addictive drug which produces in its users insanity, criminality, and death.
Marijuana is the most violence-causing drug in the history of mankind.
If the hideous monster Frankenstein came face to face with the monster of marijuana, he would drop dead from fright.
Massachusetts voters are starry-eyed nitwits, according to Boston Police Patrolmen's Association representative. Jim Carnell is editor of PAC Centurion and Area A1 representative of the Boston Police Patrolmen's Association. His opinion piece, Everybody Mustn't Get Stoned, appeared in the Boston Herald following the passage of Question 2, decriminalizing personal amounts of marijuana.
If beer-swilling idiots park themselves in public view, they can still be arrested for drinking in public. While the same cretins smoking doobies are essentially given a free pass.
This free pass is a $100 fine and confiscation of your doobies. The beer-swilling idiots, usually aren't arrested unless they are being obnoxious, as beer-swilling idiots tend to be. If the cretins smoking doobies are being obnoxious, they can still be arrested under all sorts of public order laws.
As most citizens know by now, Massachusetts ballot question 2 concerning the so-called decriminalization of marijuana was recently approved by an overwhelming 65%. This binding measure, funded in large part by billionaire George Soros, featured television commercials starring retired ex-Boston police supervisors wearing little gold badges on their lapels who expressed their support of this initiative while portraying themselves as former street cops. Many starry-eyed nitwits wearing rose-colored glasses, who obviously comprise the majority of our electorate, fell hook, line, and sinker for this.
Wow, it's nice to see a public servant with such respect for the public he serves.
Well, congratulations, general public. You've basically approved, whether you realize it or not, the public use of marijuana, openly and in front of you, your children, and tourists.
Yeah, because we are so fond of encounters with police officers, giving up our weed, and paying $100 fines. Tell me how this mass public use of marijuana begins in Massachusetts when it didn't happen in the other 12 decriminalized states?
Under this new law, things will change dramatically. First and foremost, nobody in America is required to carry official identification of any kind. Police officers encountering a group of people openly smoking marijuana on Boston Common, for example, could merely ask individuals for their personal information. It is widely anticipated by experienced police officers that Mickey Mouse, Donald Duck, and John Doe will be receiving the vast majority of these new civil violation notices.
Well, I'm no lawyer, but my scant bit of Googling brought me a Supreme Court case called Hibble v. Nevada that I think ruins your argument. According to this 2004 CNN report, the Supreme Court has given police greater power to stop and question suspects, ruling Monday that a Nevada cowboy could not refuse to give his name to officers who tried to question him along a roadside. He was arrested after he told a deputy that he didn't have to reveal his name or show an ID during an encounter on a rural road in 2000. Hibble was prosecuted based on his silence and fined $250. The Nevada Supreme Court sided with police on a 4-3 vote. In its ruling announced Monday, the justices upheld Hibble's misdemeanor conviction. Writing for the majority, Justice Anthony Kennedy said, quote, "Asking questions is an essential part of police investigation. In the ordinary sense, a police officer is free to ask a person for identification without implicating the Fourth Amendment." According to an AP report, justices were told that 20 states have similar laws to the Nevada statute upheld by the High Court. And wouldn't you know it, Massachusetts is one of those 20 states. So, if you're really having trouble with cannabis hooligans, ask for their ID. If they don't produce it, ask for their names. If you suspect they're lying, take them into custody under the same law that caught the Nevada cowboy.
Furthermore, under current Boston police rules and regulations, the seizure of any amount of illegal drugs, regardless of whether an arrest is made, requires the completion of lengthy reports detailing the incident, the seizure, and the chain of custody of the drugs involved, absolutely removing the officer from the streets for a minimum of several hours.
Is it possible to change current Boston police rules and regulations to reflect the changing times? Like, If a Boston officer catches someone with fine-only amounts of marijuana, he needs only destroy the marijuana in the presence of another witnessing officer. There. See? Simple. Or are you telling us that Boston police have been taking this much time processing small amounts of marijuana, even when they were allowed to arrest people? Because if you are, thank you for helping me make the point about the idiocy of criminalizing marijuana.
So, John Q. Public, don't be shocked when you're confronted with the pungent public smell of cannabis on the common. And don't be outraged when the police appear to do nothing, because effectively, you've handcuffed your police. Great job, Massachusetts! Ever wonder why we're the laughingstock of the nation?
It wouldn't have anything to do with the editorial opinions of its law enforcement, would it?
Stupid Stoner Stories.
As a public service, Normal reminds you that smoking marijuana will not make one stupid. However, some stupid people do smoke marijuana. Don't be one of those stoners that make the rest of us look bad. Learn your lesson from today's
Stupid Stoner Story.
Easy to spot pot nets charges in Sheboygan robbery. From the Chicago Tribune.
Sheboygan, Wisconsin. A 28-year-old man reporting a burglary faces drug charges after responding officers say they found a marijuana pipe in his bedroom. A criminal complaint filed Tuesday says officers saw the pipe in plain view in Justin Lewicki's bedroom and found marijuana stems and seeds in the living room. The complaint says officers later returned with a search warrant and found additional marijuana as well as a scale and marijuana packaging. Lewicki faces charges of felony marijuana possession and several misdemeanor counts. He could face up to 26 months behind bars if convicted on all counts.
Plain view rule, dude. If you're going to call the police to report a burglary and let them into your home, you must remove all evidence of marijuana that is in plain view. But this does highlight another troubling aspect of cannabis prohibition. How much crime goes unreported because the victims are cannabis users? How many times do criminals sniff around neighborhoods searching for a skunky smell because they know they've got a victim less likely to call the cops, and they might score some weed in the process too? Not only does prohibition make criminals out of people who aren't criminals, it hinders those people from calling the police on the real criminals.
There were 765,000 marijuana arrests in 2007. That's not for dealers and kingpins, no, that's just for simple possession. Multiply that by the average cost of each arrest, and what have you got? $7.6 billion spent on people just smoking some pot. That's enough money to buy health insurance for every child that needs it. That's enough cash to adopt every stray dog and enough left over to feed it. Mr. Obama, I kinda wrote this song for you. You got my vote for change. Now let's see what you can do.
Visit normal.org today. The battle to end adult marijuana prohibition can sometimes seem endlessly frustrating and impossible to overcome. One way we bond as a community and draw strength to continue is by rejuvenating our spirit through art and music. The Marijuana Music Awards exist to recognize those sonic artists in all genres of music who feature a ganja-friendly message to motivate and inspire all the cannabis community. Our Daily Toker Tunes, brought to you by MarijuanaMusicAwards.com, feature the finest in blues, rock, jazz, hip-hop, rap, reggae, country, bluegrass, and dance music to enhance that 420 feeling and refresh all you stashers for another day on the front lines of the drug war. Enjoy this cut from MarijuanaMusicAwards.com and visit our blog at stash.normal.org to learn how you can vote for your favorites and enter your toker tunes in the 2009 Marijuana Music Awards.
Support arresting and jailing marijuana smokers, and nearly as many support the medical patients having access to medical marijuana, and over 80% of our citizens now believe the war on drugs is an ineffective failure. So the question is, when will the government's misguided war on adult marijuana smokers finally end? When? Simple. When you and your like-minded friends, family, and coworkers get involved with an organization such as the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws, also known as NORML. My name is Keith Stropp, and I founded the organization in 1970. Contact us at NORML, toll-free, 888-67-NORML, or by visiting the organization's up-to-date webpage at www.normal.org.
Who is telling you the truth about marijuana? The government? Scientists? Doctors? Which claims are scientifically valid, and which claims
are reefer madness?
Every Wednesday, we separate the stems of propaganda from the buds of truth with NORML's look at cannabis science.
We're back once again with our dose of cannabis science and Dr. Mitch Earlywine. Dr. Mitch, welcome back to the show.
Great to be back.
All right. So we have talked so many times in the past about the subject of cannabis use and schizophrenia. And one of the things that we have heard many times from our opponents is this idea that there's a certain small subset of people who are have the possibility or the genetic predisposition to becoming schizophrenic. And if they were to use cannabis, there would be a terrible result. It would lead to a cannabis-induced psychosis. And so I'm really glad to have you on the show today to talk about this because of a new report that I saw out of Reuters Health regarding this so-called pot-induced psychosis, and maybe you could explain it to our listeners as to what this new research has found.
This is a great study, and it showed up in Archives of General Psychiatry, which is really the flagship journal of a lot of mental health researchers. And this is a group, a research group, that in the past has published a lot of stuff that made it look like marijuana actually increases the risk of psychosis. But what they've done is essentially follow up folks who had an initial psychotic reaction to cannabis, and found that it looks like, based on their evidence, that in fact these people may have been at risk for psychosis beforehand based on the number of psychotic relatives they have, and that it probably wasn't the cannabis. It was probably a set of folks who were going to develop schizophrenia later on anyway, and that in some ways a psychotic reaction to cannabis may be an interesting marker for risk for schizophrenia, but it's not that cannabis is actually causing the disorder. How did they do this is kind of an intriguing question, but the bottom line is that the folks who have a psychotic reaction to marijuana seem to have the same number of schizophrenic or schizotypal or just generally psychotic relatives as folks with the full-blown schizophrenia. And this seems consistent with the idea that, cannabis is not the cause, and just seem to kind of buttress some of the arguments that we've made in previous work. So Nick Van Dom from my lab, who's been on the stash before, showed that some of these biased assessments about, say, schizotypal personality disorder or some of the psychotic symptoms seem to work against folks who have used cannabis. And now we see that, in fact, these are folks who probably would have developed a psychotic disorder anyway, and that this reaction is really just a hallmark, not a creation of any kind of mental illness.
Right. The smoking pot didn't cause the schizophrenia. The schizophrenic happened to be smoking pot, and that kind of showed up, I guess. Is that a way to say it?
Exactly. And see, for a while there was this subset of diagnostic criteria that were supposed to be marijuana-induced psychosis.
Yeah.
And people would show up at the hospital acting psychotic, and they happened to have used marijuana recently, and people thought, oh, well, there's this high-risk crew, and they're going to have the big psychotic break in reaction to this. But it looks like actually this is more a way to uncover schizophrenia rather than actually contribute to it. And, I mean, I'm going way out on a limb here, but in some sense, if folks have a really extreme paranoid, outrageous reaction to cannabis the first time, well, of course they shouldn't use it again. It makes complete sense.
And would that possibly be something where if someone found they were with a group of friends and their friends are, you know, let's say regular marijuana users, and they don't seem to have bad reactions, and maybe when they try it their first or second time, they feel they have a bad reaction, do you think then that's something that should lead them to want to investigate whether there's any schizotypal disorders in their family history or seek further mental health evaluation?
I think that that's perfectly appropriate and nothing for anybody to, you know, feel like they're being alarmist about. In fact, if you've got, you know, a schizophrenic identical twin or, you know, one of your parents has a psychotic disorder, cannabis is probably not for you. And in fact, I wouldn't, you know, drink too much coffee. I'd take it easy on the Benadryl. Like, you really don't want to have too many psychoactive substances in your system if you're already a little bit prone to a lot of deviant experiences. Friends of mine who I love dearly, who are really creative, interesting, productive people, but who know that they're a little bit on the edge when it comes to having a lot of magical ideas and experiencing some crazy things, and so they stay away from extremes in any kind of habit, including watching their sleep, making sure they exercise regularly, not eating too much sugar and things like that, to really take care of themselves. There are other folks who, you know, really have wonderful reactions to cannabis, and we ought to make sure that they get the opportunity to have those.
Have there been any pushbacks from the mainstream medical community against this these findings? Is anyone, have you heard yet anyone from, say, a drug czar's office or somebody trying to discredit what they're finding here?
Well, this just came out in the November 2008 issue, so there hasn't been a ton of scuttlebutt on it yet. I can tell what they're going to attack, and it's that it's not a randomly assigned sort of thing. These people weren't randomly given cannabis, and so they're going to say, oh, maybe this wasn't actually the situation. But as we're learning more and more about the rates of psychosis and how they vary with rates of cannabis use, it really doesn't fit. So the countries that have heavy rates of cannabis use don't have higher rates of schizophrenia than countries that have very low rates of cannabis use. There are a whole lot of things that kind of take apart this idea that this is causal. Then the notion that there's maybe a subset of folks that are genetically at risk who then use heavily, and they're the ones who end up actually being the cannabis-induced psychotic disorders, also doesn't seem to fit in light of these data. It really does seem like these are folks who probably would have developed these symptoms anyway.
Yeah, I always make that joke about we didn't see a big rise in schizophrenia after the Summer of Love, even though the clothing and music may have sounded like it. So, but that's always good to know. And the other thing I note about this study, and, you know, I've talked with Paul Armentano numerous times about this, is, again, a study coming out of Denmark, and there would be no way you could probably get this kind of research funded in the United States. Is that still the case?
Because this is longitudinal follow-up and they didn't actually administer the cannabis in this crew, we probably could get data like this gathered. But this is tough work to do. And, in fact, the Scandinavians really have the jump on us in part because they have very complicated registries of everybody who's born there, a very nice socialized medicine system, so you pretty much can keep track of people well. And folks who live there tend to keep living there. For some reason, they really love it, and so they're easier to track than the transient peripatetic Americans who you try to, you know, follow them up for even 2 years in a study, and sometimes you're spending thousands of dollars just ringing up their wrong numbers.
Well, and it seems to me that, you know, they got a pretty large sample size here. There's something like over 600 people that were treated for the cannabis-induced psychosis, or so-called cannabis-induced psychosis, and then versus over 6,400 that had been treated for schizophrenia. I mean, that's a fairly large sample, isn't it?
Oh, this is a landmark study as far as that's concerned. I can only think of one other researcher with data, you know, this big on psychosis in general, and it's Sarnoff Mednick, who started gathering these data when before you were born and when I was a fetus.
Now, is this finally starting to sink in as far as the general medical community, this idea that, I mean, I know that for a long time they had these beliefs that pot was this amotivational thing, and that got debunked, and then somehow that pot was going to cause chromosomal damage, and that got debunked. Are we on the point now where anybody serious about the science here would just listen to any thought of cannabis being causing schizophrenia? Is that being a myth now? Can we say that's debunked?
I would say these data are pretty compellingly disputing that idea. I also find that clinicians I talk to and physicians who are out there in the field agree that they don't want their psychotic patients to use cannabis, and I could not agree more heartily, but they just kind of wink at me at the notion of it being causal. In fact, it's usually so obvious that these folks have some pretty severe genetic anomalies based on some other evidence in their family that the cannabis is the least of the issues. Unfortunately, the folks who still believe this are often the ones who are speaking the loudest, and that's unfortunately the ones who have the money to put advertisements in the newspaper about becoming a burrito taster.
Yeah.
So, So, again, I don't think anyone's going to become psychotic simply because of pot, but if you got schizophrenic in the family, by all means, keep your recreation to the non-substance-related activities and everything will be fine.
Is there any sign that there's any attraction to cannabis by people who have these backgrounds with schizophrenia in their history or background?
As odd as it sounds, and I used to live in a halfway house with 10 psychotics at a time in grad school, so I mean, I know more schizophrenics than most people meet in their lives. I have had psychotic individuals say that it's improved their focus or that it has helped them in some sense with their symptoms, but that's the kind of talk that's going to get me nailed to a cross on the cover of People magazine. I mean, you really cannot recommend this because there are some pretty compelling data from the 90s, Thornycroft in particular, suggesting that it tends to predict subsequent relapses really quickly. I think what's going on is people start to notice that their symptoms are returning, turn to cannabis first to try to get control of them, and then realize they have to go to the hospital. Other people assert that it's the cannabis that's actually causing this. Unfortunately, those are the kind of things that we're never going to be able to tease out in humans. Bill McClure at USC is working on a rat model of schizophrenia. I'm eager to see how that all works out and would love to see him get into the THC research with that.
Wow. What kind of therapy session does one have with a schizophrenic rat?
I can only imagine.
I'm just trying to imagine what the little survey is and how the rat fills it out. Anyway, Dr. Earlywine, this is all fascinating work on the schizophrenia front, and we'll keep an eye on it until it's finally and thoroughly explained. Thanks again for joining us here for our cannabis science segment.
Looking forward to talking to you again.
All right. Talk to you next week. It's tough talking to kids about marijuana, especially if you might be a parent who dabbled a time or two in your youth. So to help you out, get your copy of Dr. Mitch Earlywine's latest book, A Parent's Guide to Marijuana. Dr. Earlywine is an associate professor of psychology at the State University of New York at Albany and an expert on the studies concerning marijuana, its effect on health and society, and the methodology behind the statistics. He is a frequent guest here on our Daily Audio Stash. Dr. Earlywine lays it all out without the propaganda and scare tactics that parents know won't work with teenagers. He presents a rational understanding of cannabis, what it is and what it isn't, and why kids shouldn't be using marijuana. You can order today through Amazon.com or check our links at our blog, stash.normal.org. Thank you for downloading the Normal Daily Audio Stash, the growing truth about cannabis. We are produced by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C. Our executive producer is Alan St. Pierre. Our deputy director is Paul Armentano. Our webmaster is Brian Judy. And web production is provided by Red Aphid Interactive Media. As always, you can catch up on the latest information about marijuana at www.normal.org. And you can interact and download from our Audio Stash blog at stash.normal.org. For everyone here at Normal, I'm your host, Radical Russ Belville, hoping all your harvests are bountiful and your encounters with law enforcement are non-existent. Thanks for tuning in to this Best of Normal Daily Audio Stash episode. We really appreciate it and remind you that we'll be back with new shows on June 8th, 2009. In the meantime, get involved. Join Normal at normal.org today. And until next time, take care of each other, tokers.